You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
A few weeks ago, I was talking to Tim Collins, who has been on this podcast before. He's talked about NFTs and crypto and so on in this podcast before. I was talking to Tim Collins, and I never was really that into NFTs. But Tim got me super excited about the potential for, and I guess they'll describe the differences, but something called inscriptions and ordinals, which is like what NFTs are to Ethereum. Inscriptions and ordinals seem to be an improved version, but on Bitcoin, but much more interesting. And I'm going to let Tim and Ben Honig from Sats Republic describe. But how you guys doing?
Hey, James, it's good
to be
back.
I got super excited today when we were talking.
Oh, I know. We were driving around Austin in a car. And by the way, how good was that food?
Oh, my God. It was excellent. But I had so many questions about these inscriptions, I barely remember the food.
I was going to say, on that whole car ride over, I don't think I got out half an answer before you were asking the next question. And you are correct. The ordinal movement on Bitcoin, or the discovery on Bitcoin, is a big deal. And when you think about the comparison to NFTs and everything that NFTs lacked, which a lot of times we're talking about PNGs or JPEGs, and they're housed in the cloud as opposed to being actual data. Bitcoin, it's funny, we always say Bitcoin fixes this, but in that case, it's actually true, where this becomes something permanent and something that stays there. It's going to outlive us all. But
NFTs created a market of millions and tens of millions of dollars, and it's still, I don't want to say it's thriving, but it still exists. But this inscriptions and ordinals seems like a real thing that people could get. Like, NFTs just always had a bullshit flavor to me.
Yeah.
And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But this seems like really real. And maybe you could, guys could describe a little more what it is, and then how one can make one and why one would make one, and so on.
Well, let me do this. We'll start. I'm going to turn it over to Ben here and introduce Ben. Ben, I met through the Pizza Artifacts Ordinal Collection, which... it was actually the second thing I ever inscribed, and it was the first collection that was ever done on the exotic pizza sats. If you think back to, gosh, when was that, Ben? The first pizza
May
that 22nd. Was purchased using
2010.
Yep.
So this is when 10,000 yep. Bitcoins were used to buy one slice of pizza, or one pizza
exactly.
pie.
The world's most expensive.
Who was that
pizza
guy? Who was that guy who did it?
Laszlo Hanyas was his name.
I hope he ultimately made some money on Bitcoin.
Me too. Me too. $700 million fade's a bad one.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think he kills himself?
No.
I've seen some interviews about him, and he sits here and he's like, listen, if I didn't do it, Bitcoin wouldn't be what it is today. So if anything,
well,
you're welcome.
I don't
welcome,
know about that.
You're
taking a lot of credit.
But he did demonstrate.
It was the first ever transaction.
Real world all purchase. Right. But so Ben, I met Ben through that. And that got me turned on to the whole idea of sats. Before it was, I have a very low.
Is a Satoshi, which is one billionth of a Bitcoin.
One hundredth millionth. So
1/100 millionth of a Bitcoin.
So the same way that there's 100 pennies in $1, there's 100 million Satoshis in one Bitcoin.
And imagine asking for that change.
So right. So I have a couple questions. You made an inscription relating to these pizza coins, the Bitcoins actually used in the transaction for the pizza. It's as if I had like a dollar that Barack Obama used to ride the subway on his way to voting or something. So it's as if I had that actual dollar. And so you took a Satoshi from one of these 10,000 Bitcoins that were used to buy in the very first Bitcoin transaction, and you inscribed like a picture of a pizza on it. So what is the meaning of that? What's the value of that? Why'd you do that? What is this? What's an inscription?
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe you could answer, right? And did you start the pizza project that Tim got excited about?
Yes, I did. And I know a mutual friend of ours through the Bored Ape community, just from being a part of that previously. Still am.
And you have a Bored Ape NFT hanging right behind you.
I do. It's the Rolling Stone magazine. There's a few other from the different ape fests over here. I got to do something with all the memorabilia.
Now, do you have an original, speaking of NFTs, do you have an original Bored Ape NFT?
Yeah, of course.
And what's
I actually,
that worth
I think right now, last I looked, the floor is at like 14 ETH, which is obviously, you know, down from all-time highs big time. But
still 42,000.
I was fortunate. It's still, I was about to say, ETH is still up. It's still not cheap. That being said, you know, a lot of Ethereum projects are losing a lot of steam, including CryptoPunks right now because of, you know, the big craze in ordinals right now. That being said, you know, I think CryptoPunks have staying power. I think that, you know, Bored Apes are still, you know, Yuga is still the most well-capitalized, you know, NFT company in the world. And, you know, I think that there's hope. I think that, you know, obviously, you know, every company goes through their bumps. But I think what's interesting is that Bored Apes are still always talked about. They're still like the strongest IP play when it comes to Web3. And there's, you know, Pudgy Penguins are definitely giving them a run for their money. But everyone knows what a Bored Ape is still. So I think they're still culturally relevant.
I always thought there wasn't anything truly artistic about NFTs or like, okay, there maybe is some value, some utility, like maybe they could be used as tickets or, you know, I was trying to think of use cases for NFTs. This is another topic. We've talked about NFTs, but there's something that seems intrinsically interesting about inscriptions and ordinals to me. And also, by the way, for Bitcoin miners, this is very interesting. It's a way, a new revenue source now that the halving is going to cut their revenues in half. So maybe like what's,
yeah. So,
maybe describe what this pizza inscription is and then we can start from that.
For sure. So what I'll actually start with initially is, you know, what are ordinals and how does this all work? So essentially there is a Bitcoin dev named Casey Rodmore who invented something called ordinal theory. And what ordinal theory does is it's a lens into Bitcoin, meaning it's built on top of Bitcoin's pre-existing, you know, protocol. And what he's done is he's created a protocol on top of that that assigns numbers to each individual Satoshi, starting from the first one to the last one. So, you know, you have the Genesis block that Satoshi Nakamoto mined, and every single Satoshi in each Bitcoin is assigned an individual number, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, and so on and so forth.
Up to 21 million.
Yes. Well, remember, 21 million times 100 million.
It is the number of Satoshis.
Correct.
And they're numbered.
Correct. And so these exotic pizza sats, for instance, are, you know, as you do the numbering and you see when the transaction happened for of those 10,000 Bitcoin for the two pies of pizza, you're able to say, oh, those are these specific sats because you can see when that transaction happened on chain. You can take a look at the block explorer, go to May 22nd, 2010, and you can very clearly see, you know, a transaction for 10,000 Bitcoin.
Okay, so step one is, and this is interesting to me, you have to look, like, let's say I'm hypothetically interested in some historical occasion on the Bitcoin blockchain, a transaction that occurred, like the very first transaction, 10,000 Bitcoins for one pizza pie. And first step is I have to find those 10,000 coins.
Correct.
And
now, obviously, you know, with there being, you know, 10,000 Bitcoin in that transaction, that's a lot of Satoshis. So pizza artifact, like pizza sats, pizza artifacts are different, but pizza sats are exotic. They're not rare. There's a ton of them and they're, you know, pretty inexpensive to acquire because they're part of 10,000 Bitcoin. But they have a great story.
But how would I even find those 10 Satoshis from those 10,000 Bitcoin?
For sure. So when you send Bitcoin from one person to another, for instance, if you have one Bitcoin and you send me one Bitcoin, but maybe you have 10 Bitcoin in your wallet, I'm getting one Bitcoin from you, but the underlying Satoshis that make up that UTXO that you're sending are totally different. So what people do is they'll sat hunt. So for instance, I'll take 10 Bitcoin and send it to Coinbase, and then I'll withdraw it back. Now, while I might still be sending 10 Bitcoin to Coinbase and receiving 10 Bitcoin in return, the underlying Satoshis that I'm getting are different. So what I'm able to do is imagine you have like, you know, 10 decks of cards and you're shuffling them all around and you're trying to find all the ace of spades. That's what's happening over here. You're sifting through different Bitcoin and extracting individual sats. And the way you do that is you're able to go and manipulate the different UTXOs and take out the individual Satoshis.
So I'm just, I know this is getting probably a little technical for listeners. So let's say first, I just want to find one of the 10,000 Bitcoins that were used in the pizza transaction. How would I go about finding that Bitcoin?
Well, nowadays, I mean, like you could go to the Block Explorer, you could, you know, like mempool.space or Block Explorer, you know, any Block Explorer.
He doesn't want to give away all his secrets though.
Imagine. But you just, you know, literally go scroll back, or if you're, you know, writing some code, you can query the indexers and find that exact date and find the transactions that happened on that.
And what
date.
If someone owns that Bitcoin right now? What if that's buried in some wallet somewhere?
For sure. So there's really cool tools that you can go to, like satting.io, that allows you to copy and paste a wallet address and it'll tell you the Satoshis in that wallet. Another great place to go is a rare sat marketplace called Magisat, magisat.io, and you can put your wallet address in there and it'll show you the actual rare and exotic Satoshis in your wallet. And these can be pizzas, or for instance, a really popular one are the Block 9 sats or the Block 9 450Xs, which are the first transaction to ever happen on Bitcoin, period. This is when Satoshi sent money to Hal Finney. He sent 50 Bitcoin. So you could have a Block
9. 50 times 100 million Satoshis exist from that very first transaction.
For
and
sure.
Tim, you just said you own some of those Satoshis.
Yeah, I know Ben does as well, but I finally broke down and went and bought a bunch of the exotics, and it basically kind of like a diverse portfolio of exotics between palindromes and JPEGs and vintage.
Where did you buy them? Did you find them
actually
on
Magisat? Nope, Magisat. I went through Magisat. That is.
What's the odds if I have like 10 Bitcoin? What's the odds if I look at my wallet, there's one of those Satoshis?
Not high. That's the thing. A Block 9 is incredibly difficult to find because those are so early. Those are mostly on dead wallets that just haven't moved in years. So to actually get one in circulation, it's not easy right now. It's obviously, you know, the fact
like
that
palindrome or an alpha.
For
or
sure.
Omega, something
for sure. Sense. And uncommons
and
are a little
being,
bit easier also.
A palindrome being not.
Remember, each Satoshi is numbered. So that number is just a palindrome, same as it forward as it is backwards. So the Satoshi number is the same forward as it is backwards.
So every Bitcoin, all 21 million Bitcoins have palindromes, have repeating numbers and the whole thing.
They're given a sat number, and that sat number could be a palindrome or it could be an alphanumeric palindrome.
But specifically though, this block 9 Satoshis are Satoshis that were in one of those first 50 Bitcoins. How do you extract the Satoshi from the Bitcoin?
So Satting and Magisat both have really easy to use tools now where you can just connect your wallet and it'll automatically, with a very pretty user interface, you can literally just click on the sat type, click isolate, and it's done.
Yeah, you can
What's going on? Yeah, exactly. And obviously, you know, it might get a little too technical for the audience of what's going on behind the hood. But what's happening is essentially you're rearranging different sats and splitting up different UTXOs to reorganize these and kind of move the position of each sat within a UTXO. And for people that don't know, a UTXO is an unspent transaction output, which is money that you have yet to actually spend from your wallet.
So there's two things interesting. One is this underlines the difference between Bitcoins and a dollar. Like I can't take a US dollar and give you the exact pennies that come from that dollar. it just so happens a penny is worth 1/100th of a dollar, but a dollar isn't made up of 100 pennies that I could then pull out and spend individually. Like a Bitcoin, you could actually take it apart and pull the pennies out of a Bitcoin. So that's interesting. Yep. But the other interesting thing, like take this Block 9 thing or the pizza transactions, and this is a big difference between inscriptions and NFTs. It seems like there's what makes something valuable, like what makes a specific Satoshi valuable is almost its historical significance on the blockchain. On like Satoshis that came out of that first transaction, it's almost like they Satoshi touched them. And so
he did.
It's a real collectible.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he did. Yeah, that's why they are collectible, because he did. Those were in his wallet.
Yeah. So it's like I can see, like the same way people collect baseball cards, I could see how someone could want to collect. If someone loves the history of Bitcoin and everything about Bitcoin, there's value there. There's real, you know.
And like not only is there value there, but if you think about, you know, the average Bitcoin holder. Average Bitcoin holder never really had anything to do with their Bitcoin, right? They had to just hold it. And there are obviously, you know, a lot of people that definitely got those through not the most legal terms and really can't spend them without getting flagged. And now, all of a sudden, there's this whole market that is giving people that are traditionally, you know, Bitcoin whales just holding Bitcoin an opportunity to actually put that Bitcoin to work. Because some of these, you know, collections that people are buying and selling, similarly to the NFT boom of 2021, are skyrocketing. You know, for instance,
somebody who just wants to hold on to their Bitcoins forever can say, hey, I'll trade you some of these exotic or rare Satoshis for some amount of money that you give me for 1,000 regular Satoshis.
Exactly. It's like if you were buying, you know, a penny that George Washington held, a penny is a penny. It's 1 cent. But because it was George Washington's, maybe you're paying $1 million for one penny. So it's interesting, right, where you're paying X amount of sats for an individual Satoshi.
Like, remember the wheat pennies. I remember growing up as a kid, you'd always try to collect the wheat pennies. Hey, these are worth more. Or the Indian head nickels.
So immediately, I understand, as opposed to NFTs, I understand, like, NFTs gain value in large part because of the community that was created around a particular group, like the Bored Apes or CryptoPunks or whatever. But this is, so that didn't quite make sense to me. But in this, here you're saying there are specific Satoshis and coins out there that have value because of their historical significance. I buy into that because that's like every collectible market. That's a real collectible market. Take a quick break. If you like this episode, I'd really, really appreciate it. It would mean so much to me. Please share it with your friends and subscribe to the podcast. Email me at altitra@gmail.com and tell me why you subscribed. Thanks. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Now, what does it mean now to then inscribe, and why are some Satoshis worth more than others and so on?
For sure. So when Casey created the protocol, he actually defined Satoshi rarity into the protocol itself. And these are based on different mining activities. So for instance, the most accessible type of rare sat is a uncommon sat, which is the first sat that is mined in every single block. And that happens about every 10 minutes. So what you're able to do is those are, you know, when those first started being bought and sold, or rather traded, you know, before there were P2P marketplaces and it was all OTC and Discords like spreadsheet days, which was very much a thing back in, you know, January, February, up until, you know, like March, you know, people are paying upwards of $1,500 just for one uncommon sat, just because they were so hard to get at the time. Now they trade for around $200. But the prices are usually very volatile. And as you inscribe on them, the supply of them is deflationary. Because once you inscribe on a sat, you can't uninscribe it. So it kind of takes it out of circulation.
But so you could modify the inscription though, right?
You can re-inscribe a sat. You can't modify the pre-existing one. It's fully immutable. So like, for instance, what I could do is I could have an inscription, like a PFP that evolves, right? Like I could have, you know, for instance, Pizza Ninjas is a really neat project where what they do is, you know, they have hit this thing called the sat endpoint, which allows you to take your current pizza, inscribe new art on top of it, and then it can display the latest index of what's inscribed. So the most recent thing gets displayed to the public as opposed to like the first thing.
So you can do. Okay, so backing up a second. So in this guy Casey's ordinal theory, he basically said certain Satoshis in Bitcoins are worth more than others. For instance, the first Satoshi that is mined in a particular block is more valuable than the other third Satoshis.
One. Yeah,
correct.
The third one. The fourth.
Correct.
And I didn't know this, I guess, but Satoshis, when miners are mining, are validating a transaction, they mine it one Satoshi at a time?
They're mining a block at a time. And a block, you're given a reward, for instance. Right now, you're given 6.25 Bitcoin as a reward for mining a block. And then after the halving, obviously, that's going to be 3.125. So that's another interesting point, actually, is that at this current halving, there is what's called an epoch sat that's going to be mined, which is the first sat mined at each halving block. And currently, there's only three in circulation right now. So they're incredibly rare because there's only been three halvings. Now there's a fourth. And not only is there a fourth, but Casey is launching a new protocol called Runes, which is essentially enabling for shitcoins or meme coins on Bitcoin. The whole idea is to make the world's grandest casino. And it gives people the opportunity to deploy their own tokens onto Bitcoin. So, and that's also happening at the halving.
They can take a block and they could say every Satoshi on this block is James coin.
Well, it's a little bit more tactical about what happens there. What he actually does is you store this data in what's called an op return. And then you actually store things in the transaction output, but that's getting way too technical. But that's coming out at the halving, along with an epic sat being mined at the halving. And this epic sat is likely going to trade for anywhere between, you know, $2.5 upwards to $10 million. Because there's only four that exist. To give you an idea, you know, some other very expensive ones that have previously sold, there's what's called a rare sat, which is the first sat that is mined in each difficulty adjustment period. Sat Republic actually brought the first rare sat to auction at Sotheby's, where, you know, the auction house actually recognized rare sats. And we sold that for 2.7 Bitcoin. But what's also really cool is that what's called a black sat, which is someone pretty much took the narrative and said, well, why does it have to be an uncommon sat if it's the first sat that's mined in each block? What about the last sat? And those are called black sats. And they've caught, you know, a pretty crazy narrative. And the community is kind of like really bought into it. And Casey Rodemore gave them his blessing of it being cool. And as a result, they're very much a thing. And the first ever black rare sat from 2009 actually sold for like 4 Bitcoin in that Sotheby's auction. So people are paying real money for this.
You're talking about things that are going for $250,000 that are 1/1,000,000th of a Bitcoin.
1/100,000,000th.
Or 1/100,000,000. I always mess that up.
So and we're not even at the inscriptions yet. We're just talking about valuable Satoshis that are valuable for historical reasons.
Yep.
And so what's the point then? So there's a market for that. The community plus this guy Casey has sort of decided which Satoshis are more valuable than others. And it sounds like it makes some common sense, like the first one, the last one, palindromes, maybe other unique numbers. I don't know. What are inscriptions then on top of this?
Yeah, so inscriptions is essentially, you know, this whole idea that Ordinals really enabled, which is taking advantage of the witness data in a Taproot wallet and allowing you to essentially store data within transactions. So if you're a miner, you can store up to a 4 MB file on a specific sat. And then if you just to do like relay issues on the network or relay, I wouldn't say issues, but just like relay permissions on the network, you can only do up to 400 kilobytes as like a regular person who's not a miner. But you're able to store arbitrary data on an actual sat. So for instance, if I take an image and I take like a regular JPEG and I have it under 400 kilobytes, I can store that as a whole string of text, a base64 image is what it's called. And you put that on a sat. And then through any web browser, you're able to display that just like you could anywhere. And that applies, not just images.
Yeah, so sorry to interrupt. I just want to make an analogy so everybody kind of understands. So if I Venmo you a dollar, I have to say what that dollar's for. Like, oh, I Venmoed Ben because I bought a pizza from him. I have to put that in the Venmo transaction. That's like the metadata of this transaction, and an inscription is sort of like the metadata.
I'll give you a better analogy. Sorry to cut you off now. I'll give you a better analogy.
Please cut me off.
Don't be sorry. Don't be sorry.
don't ever apologize for that.
So the best way that I have found to describe this to people is, imagine I gave you a penny, and traditionally you have Abraham Lincoln on the front and you have the monument on the back. Now, let's say I give you this pen, and the penny is, you know, let's say it's rare, it's from 1776 or whatever, right? Let's say that same penny doesn't have Abraham Lincoln on the front and it doesn't have the monument. You just have this copper coin from 1776. That's the rare sat. You can view the rare sat as a canvas, right? It adds to the narrative of what you're putting on it. You then are taking a chisel and you're etching, you know, Abraham Lincoln on the top of that penny, and you're putting the monument on the back. And that's what an inscription is. You're putting data onto the sat. And does that make
why
sense?
Why do we need inscriptions? Like, why isn't just the market for rare or exotic sats interesting by itself?
Because there's a lot of things that you can do once you're able to store data on the network, and especially not just the network, but the Bitcoin, you know, the most decentralized, most secure network in the entire world. Whereas opposed to, like, that's the whole value add here, is that you're actually storing data on chain on Bitcoin, as opposed to, for instance, like a Bored Ape is stored on IPFS. And what's IPFS? It's a bunch of Amazon servers, you know. Same thing with
Arbitrum. They go down, it's gone.
Or Filecoin. You know, it's all just distributed, you know, servers. This isn't Bitcoin. It's actually stored on every single person who's running an Ordinals indexer. It is being stored on their node. So it's fully on-chain. And that's the value add here. And what's neat is that this doesn't apply to just images, right? I can store code. I can store JavaScript. I can store HTML, CSS, any language, and I want, and I can have them all interact with one another within this sandbox of the Bitcoin network. So,
James, you can do a
on-chain program.
You could do a book like that, and it can never go. It will never go away. Unlike if you were to put a book onto an NFT that was stored at Pinata or IPFS, if those companies go out of business, your book is gone.
Yeah, like, but a Filecoin,
it's different.
Disappears as a coin for whatever reason. Millions of NFTs are gone.
I mean, those are, I think, stored on IPFS also. Like, they're stored somewhere, right? They're on some sort of like an Amazon server.
But inscription,
like those aren't, remember, those aren't stored on the coin itself. Like, it would be on, like, if Ethereum disappeared one day and you weren't able to access the smart contracts, and, you know, you weren't able to see the, if you ever take a look at like the Bored Ape contract, you see that each Bored Ape has what's called a token URI, and that's just, or token URL, and that is just referencing an IPFS address that is pulling in an image or pulling in the JSON of the metadata.
But like, if I wrote a book and inscribed it on one Satoshi, then, or let's say I took 10 consecutive Satoshis and made a book, like, that's a book. Or, and then I guess I could use 100 million Satoshis to print, like, you know, a million books then. Yeah, 10 million books. And so what? So I can make a whole publishing company where books are just stored on Satoshis.
Sure.
I mean, you could do that. You could, obviously, yeah. I mean, like, listen, you could probably get a book down to like 400 kilobytes for sure. But if you can't, what you could do, which is also interesting, is you could inscribe each page of a book and then do what's called a recursive inscription, right? So what I can do is I inscribe 1,000 pages of a book, and then I have another inscription that says, okay, reference all 1,000 of these inscriptions and make me, with JavaScript, a fun animating flipbook. And I can just take those images in, and then fully on-chain, you have like an animated, you know, book that's pulling in the previous pages. And what's cool also is that people can own a page of the book, right? So it's like, if you wanted to, like, it might be an interesting idea in case you wanted to sell a book, instead of people buying a copy of the book, you mint it out, people can own an individual page, you can actually own the page of the book, and then you're actually distributed this other, you know, inscription, which allows you to render the entire book. That's just an idea I came up with off the top of my head, but like, it's something you could do. You know, I haven't seen anyone do it.
Let's say Warren Buffett was gonna, not that he was interested in Satoshis or Bitcoins at all, but let's say Warren Buffett was gonna put a stock pick on a Satoshi and auction it off. That's potentially something that could be valuable, for instance.
Sure.
And it's something that's on the blockchain forever.
If Warren Buffett says this is it, Yeah. I mean, yeah. If Warren Buffett actually came out and said something positive about crypto, that'd be one thing. If he actually came out and said that, you know, he inscribed his pick on a sat. Yeah. I mean, like, that's the provenance right there.
I'm just thinking, what's the use case? Like right now, right? I see there's artistic use case. Like, okay, we're going to get this historical Satoshis from these historical Bitcoin transactions. We're going to make some image on it to give it a little bit more artistic value. And now we're going to sell it. What are some other things that could happen with?
Honestly, when we looked at NFTs, like with birth certificates, college graduations, high school diplomas work much better on a sat because they're all on chain and you don't have to deal with Amazon web server going down and all of a sudden I don't have access to my data anymore.
Right. And it seems like it's less friction to find. I mean, it could be in your Bitcoin wallet.
Yep. Very simple. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Ben. No. I know you had some other ideas too.
It's what I would say is it's a more true form of an NFT because of its immutable provenance on the Bitcoin network. And the truth of the matter is Ethereum going to be around forever? Probably. You know, like Ethereum is obviously an incredible, you know, smart contract platform. That being said, there's Base, there's Arbitrum, there's Optimism, there's all these L2s, there's Solana, there's Sui, you know, whatever the hell there is. And I have no idea what the hell is going to last in the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. But I definitely can assure you that Bitcoin will be here. And that's why it just makes most sense. If you're going to store something on chain, it might as well be on the most decentralized, most secure network in the world, which is the king of all cryptocurrencies. What's neat in terms of like an everyday use case and more than just, you know, inscribing images is, you know, back to things you can do with code, for instance, long form generative art has been really having an interesting moment as well, because what you're able to do is that people have inscribed, for instance, the P5JS framework on an individual Satoshi. What you're able to do is as an artist, you're able to code your generative art and have it reference that P5JS inscription. The same way if you are writing code on your computer and importing p5.js from a library, you're importing it the same exact way, but it's all on the Bitcoin network, right? So it's not hitting any external sources. And you can do really neat things, like you can reveal the art or have the seed to that generative art be a specific block, right? And have a delayed reveal, for instance. So like, let's say we're minting at block 840,000, which is the halving. I can make it so if maybe I have a collection of 100, one is going to reveal at 840,001, 840,002, and a fully on-chain delayed reveal with the block itself being, you know, the seed, which is like, I think, really, really cool. There's other use cases as well. People are making, you know, like MIDI systems so you can generate music on-chain. I mean, like, at the tip of the iceberg right now. You know, like, this has only been around a year.
And so, like, what do you see? Like, let's say someone's listening to this, doesn't quite understand everything you're saying. How can they think about this in terms of like, I want to get involved early in this because I didn't with NFTs, and what's something creative they could do? How are you making money right now with this? You know, other than your company.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. You know, obviously like we've definitely generated revenue, you know, building SatScribe, which was the first inscription platform for rare and exotic sats. You know, obviously there's tons now, but this was back in June when we launched it. You know, obviously Pizza Artifacts do well, and we have this new platform that we're rolling out.
You took rare sats, like the first sat from one of the 10,000, you know,
well, exotic sats.
Okay, you took an exotic sats from the 10,000 Bitcoins, you inscribed something that made whoever sees this inscription aware that, hey, this is a Satoshi, this is an exotic sat from one of the Bitcoins from the very first that pizza transaction. And what are one of those Satoshis worth right now?
So yeah. So a Pizza Artifact, they've done very well. So when we launched those in June, was it June 2023? We launched those for 0.01 Bitcoin. And at the time, Bitcoin was $25,000. So it's like $250. And now Bitcoin is $70,000 and they're trading actively for 0.135 Bitcoin. So around $10,000 US, $9,500.
So they've gone up in value, and Bitcoin's gone up in value.
And there's only 222 of.
Yeah, there's only 222 of them as well.
Why 222? Why did you pick that number?
Sorry. That is a very good question. it had to do so. It's really interesting. So it was partially like we wanted like a fun number, like 222, and like the 21 million is obviously a significant number when it comes to Bitcoin. But like having, you know, like 210 felt weird. But the truth of the matter is a lot of it was like, how do we have a big enough community that also feels kind of tightly knit that we can curate the specific holders that we'd like to be on for this journey with us? But at the same time, just so you understand, like it is not cheap to do these inscriptions on Bitcoin. So when we first launched this, this was like a massive risk where it was like, if we don't sell out right now, we just spent 0.35 Bitcoin inscribing this, which is a lot of money for, you know, a founder to just put up and potentially lose. You know, it's like $20,000 at the time. So, or a little bit, like 0.35, what was that, like 12,000, 15,000, whatever. A substantial amount of money that to put up. You know, a substantial amount of money to put up to, you know, maybe not mint out. You know, obviously we did mint out pretty quickly. It only took a couple of hours because, you know, obviously launching out in tandem with Satscribe. But, you know, there's a lot of risk. Like if you're doing a project and there's, you know, 5,000 unique inscriptions on here. I mean, now with recursive inscriptions, there are different ways to try to bring that cost down, but you're spending a lot of money. For instance, Leonidas, who's a big Ordinals influencer, launched this thing called Runestone, which is it's the largest, fairest community airdrop within the Ordinals world. I think 113,000 people were airdropped these. And the way that it happened was that he took a snapshot of any wallet that had up to three inscriptions that weren't text files at a certain block height. And those were considered OGs within the space. And then he partnered up with a miner, he partnered up with OrdinalSpot, and he partnered up with a bunch of different people in the community that donated up to 8 Bitcoin, I believe it was, to do all this. You know, to inscribe 113,000 things costing 8, that's a lot of money, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like a big risk right now if you're, well, it's a big risk as a founder, but the nice thing is because, you know, now there's some platforms that allow you to do pay as you go kind of mints, but like for the most part, like if you want to be on like the Magic Eden launchpad, you need to inscribe it yourself, which means that you as a founder need to put your own money where your mouth is, which kind of filters out the grifters and the people that aren't serious about, you know, actually building out what they're building out. You know, for me to like put up, you know, me and my co-founders put up like $15,000 to like maybe it turned into nothing. It's like it's a big gamble, you know?
Well, how do you build a community to support that you know will kind of buy out your project?
That's a very good question. So a lot of it has been like just like years of me and my co-founder being in the space and just like, you know, being like everyone else, like we've been degenerates, you know, in our non-Web3 lives, you know, we're builders, you know, like I'm a software engineer for 15 years. My co-founder was a former software engineer. Also, you know, built like early DeFi analytics software. And, you know, both of us were kind of just sitting here and like, you become friends with a lot of people in the communities that you're trading with all the time. I'm in a ton of different group chats. We're all on Twitter spaces all the time. It's hilarious. It's like this whole community of people that like I literally speak to more than I speak to my everyday IRL friends, but I speak to them all day, every day on Twitter, you know? And it's like, you almost feel like you know these people. And you just sit on these Twitter spaces long enough and all of a sudden you have a following and you're like I said, you're trading together and it's like, listen, I'm building something and everyone's kind of just like, down to support because, you know, I've posted pretty good calls that, you know, we've made money. I've obviously posted some that haven't, but like, you know, like everyone's kind of feeding off of each other and everyone's just down to support one another. And also, I don't know, I've been here since January, like literally since these were a thing. And there's a very small community of founders that came from that time period. And we all know each other and we're all like pretty good friends with each other at this point. So it's like, we're all down to support and help one another out. Like that's the very interesting thing about this community is that everyone here is really down to support one another. You know, like if I have, like pretty much I could tell you any founder that I've interacted with in the past, if they tell me something's minting, I'm minting it, you know, like anything to support them because they've done the same. And because I've seen them here for a full year grinding.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
And so there are some, again, there's tons of Satoshis, or not tons, but there are these exotic Satoshis that have, let's call it, some intrinsic value regardless of who's selling it. Then there's inscriptions on rare Satoshis or exotic Satoshis of you know, various Bitcoins. And it's the art plus the historical transaction aspect that give it extra value,
plus the community.
Yeah, the community around the founder of it. And then what do you think is the next generation of that? Like, again, how's the everyday person going to get involved? How's this going to break out of the close-knit community?
It's a great question also. And this is one that I think a lot of people are spending a lot of time solving. It's something that I think about often. I think that the way that you do it is you need to have products that are seamless to use for, this is the test that I use. If my mother can use it, I know it's good for the public to use it. You know, my mom is like 64 years old. She probably would hate me saying that on a podcast right now.
No, I agree with you completely. I think that's the litmus test for crypto in general, by the way. It's 64-year-old.
Which no one listens to.
Right. But it's better now. I'll tell you, we're having this conversation in, like, let's say 2017 or 2016, I felt the Bitcoin community didn't want 64-year-olds to use it. Like, everybody was quote unquote hodling. They had their own language. And if you didn't speak, it's like internet
for
users
sure.
In 1993 when AOL opened up internet news groups to their members. Everybody, all the academics on the internet were very upset. And I feel crypto has morphed now into people understand that you need wide use of a currency in order for it to be used. It needs to be simple to use.
Well, I think that this is, you know, one of those aha moments where a lot of builders like myself are having, where it's like, okay, this is finally another opportunity to really, like, start over again, really bring Bitcoin to the masses. How do we do it? Oh, no one really understood buying and holding. But now if I tell you, there is, like, really serious collecting of art that you can be doing on here, and not just art, but, like, so many other use cases, you know, membership to clubs, you know, like Tim was saying, you know, like, different certificates and things like that. Now that there is actually a use case and an opportunity to actually put your Bitcoin to work, you know, you have these moments where it's like, okay, well, how are we going to make it super easy to do that? So, you know, for instance, like I said, I've been building mobile apps for the past 15 years. That's kind of like my bread and butter. Kind of dumbing down hard to understand concepts and making them a little bit more palatable. And that's what I'm focusing on right now, is building very strictly mobile first infrastructure. Everyone goes to the web and everyone likes to do, like, a Google Chrome extension or a website. The truth of the matter is everyone's on their phone, and even most 64-year-olds know how to use an iPhone these days, because you can't even park your damn car without scanning a QR code from an iPhone app. You know, apps are everywhere. So you might as well have a very easy to use app that allows you to very quickly, for instance, trade your runes, collect your rare sats, see what your portfolio is worth, the same exact way that you could download Fidelity and do it there. So that's what my focus is on right now, is how do I make it super easy for the everyday collector to get involved.
And the big argument against NFTs was just that, hey, this is just a JPEG. How come I can't just cut and paste this into a file and print it up and put it on my wall? But this solves that problem, because these are Satoshis that are verifiably part of some important historical thing, like the first Satoshi mind after that having or whatever.
Listen, the truth of the matter is you could still right-click save an image, right? You could still right-click and save the image.
Yeah.
But like at the end of the day, you know, like you right-click saving an image and not having the wallet or not owning the private key to that wallet, you don't own it. It's the same kind of idea as NFT. So I don't think it's much different in that regard where like right-click save movement is still a thing. But I think that like if you take a look at where the world's going right now, you see like the Quest 3, you have the Vision Pro, you see a full world where we're going to be living in this like AR, VR kind of mixed reality. And eventually that's going to gravitate to like a Google Glass, which was a little bit premature for its time, where you're able to actually, you know, see, I could walk down the street and see digital ads on a building the same way if I'm watching like a hockey game, I can see the digital ads around the boards, you know, like we're about to be living, and especially with Neuralink, like all these things sound crazy, except for the fact that it's, you know, you're seeing a guy with cerebral palsy playing, you know, chess with his mind, you know, from Neuralink's latest video. And then you realize very quickly, oh shit, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on this, but like, this is where we're going. Yeah, we are going to a digital first world. And, you know, owning something in the digital, like if you ask a kid right now, what would you rather do? Would you rather like own something in the physical world or buy something in Roblox? They'd rather buy something in Roblox, you know?
Right. But the difference with the NFTs and the inscriptions is that literally the canvas you own it on, an inscription on, has value because that canvas is a very particular Satoshi in each case. Whereas the NFTs...
That's true. I mean, like, that's the fun thing. They're never going to zero. As Bitcoin goes up, the value of a sat goes up, right? You know, that's just the way that it works. So yeah. Like, they're technically, unless Bitcoin
and
goes
value
to zero,
of these
they're not
rare
going to
sats
zero.
Go up more. Right. So I'm just correct. Wondering, like, what's the range of creativity? Like, I bet you there's going to be an opportunity where some artist or somebody who's creative in some other way is going to come up with an idea of inscribing that's going to have value outside of kind of the crypto Twitter community where everybody knows each other. Like, I feel like there's going to be a growth point here that didn't happen with NFTs.
It's so early that... it's much more possible. Also, you have the learning curve from the NFTs. You can see where a lot of projects went wrong, where some projects went right. The other thing in order to support some of these early movers is we're seeing a lot of airdrops in order to reward early adopters of ordinals, the upcoming runes, exotic sats, rare sats, uncommon sats. So we are seeing the early project founders saying, look, if you've supported me or if you just supported the community, I'm going to reward you just to keep the community growing. We saw that a little bit in NFTs, but not very much. It was very much this community is closed and this community is closed and this community is closed and you got to buy this in order to be part of our club. With ordinals, we haven't seen that, especially with runes coming up. We haven't seen that. It's if you're a here, you know, we're going to reward you. Runestone, which, you know, there were guys in some of my communities that got dropped runestone. And we weren't super active in ordinals, but we did inscribe some ordinals very, very early, sub 445,000 inscriptions. Now we're at like 70 million. So it was very early. Those guys got an airdrop. That airdrop now is worth like $7,000 or $8,000. What is it?
They're trading for like 0.09 Bitcoin right now.
Per Satoshi?
This runestone.
And that was just for doing three inscriptions. And I think they spent $90 to do three inscriptions. And now they have an asset that's valued at over $7,000, $6,000. Obviously, the values change. And they're in line to receive some upcoming additional airdrops, it looks like. So this community is very supportive, very different than NFTs.
I went on this site, OrdaScan, and it says basically there's like 68 million inscriptions. Who are these 68 million people? Or not people, obviously. People are doing more than one inscription. But like who? Actually, I'm looking at all these pizza
ones. Yeah,
so
a lot of these inscriptions... I don't know. It could, if you're looking, We are defined like as an actual collection. If you search Pizza Artifacts on OrderScan or on Magic
Eden, it's P-I-Z-A.
We're like that. No. This is P-I-Z-Z-A.
Pizza Artifacts, P-I-Z-Z-A.
We spelled pizza the right way.
These people are trying to just make money off you, maybe.
That's basically what it is, is you have some of these – provenance is a big deal in Bitcoin lore and Bitcoin history. And so like what drew me to Pizza Artifacts is it was the first organized product that – project that minted on pizza sats. And so now, you know, I own one of the pieces that is a Genesis collection – on pizza sats. Any other ones coming on pizza sats are going to be second, third, and on down the line. And we know from everything that goes on in collectibles and in history, being first matters. And being first has a value. So, you know,
to give you an idea, like the first Ordinals collection period, which is sub 1,000 inscriptions. Again, we're at 70 million now, sub 1,000. They have a floor of like 2.5 Bitcoin. And actively going for like 2.5 to 5 Bitcoin.
And so like, who's who is buying and selling? Is it just crypto people, or has it, again, you mentioned Sotheby's has been auctioning off some of these rare sats. Like how does the growth look to you?
I think that we are in such a bubble right now where everyone is so bullish within this little Bitcoin bubble, and it hasn't even had the opportunity to like explode into like what it's going to be. Like we are very much in an echo chamber where everyone is like all bullish all together right now, but it is such a small knit community right now, like compared to what we saw with NFTs, compared to like the entire world of people that were Bitcoin maxis and, you know, never gave Ethereum or any other network the size, like the time of day. You know, you're seeing like the most OG builders, you know, build on Bitcoin, like on Ordinals right now. Like the Taproot Wizards is a very notable project where you have Udi Wertheimer and you have people like Jameson Lopp, you know, like Hal Finney, who, you know, literally received those first 50 Bitcoin from Satoshi Nakamoto, doesn't follow many people. Jameson is one of them. Like this is like some of the most OG people in the space are finally super excited to be building on Bitcoin again.
So if someone wanted to view like Satoshi's and maybe buy some, where can they look? Like listeners are probably just still curious, like what's going on here? Where can they look to see some Satoshi's, learn some more about it, maybe buy some? And when you buy some, again, it's you just put it in your Bitcoin wallet with your Bitcoins.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's a bunch of tools now that make it super easy. You know, obviously, we built SatScribe that allows you to just click what type of rare Satoshi you want. You can either buy them individually or you can inscribe on them. Another great marketplace where you can kind of do like a P2P trading, kind of like an OpenSea from NFTs, but for rare sats, Magisat is a great one. Magic Eden is another great one. Luminex is a great platform for doing parent-child provenance, which is something we didn't even get a chance to talk about. But long story short, you know a Bored Ape is a Bored Ape because it's attached to the Bored Ape contract. What you're able to do on Bitcoin is if you're an artist or a founder or whatever, you can inscribe what's called a parent inscription and then have children inscriptions that on-chain connect to the parents. So you can actually see the whole family tree on-chain, which is as true of provenance as it gets. I would say those four places, SatScribe, MatchSat, Magic Eden, OrdiScan is a great place. Ord.io is a great explorer as well. Xverse wallet is probably the most popular wallet right now to use. They support rare sats. Magic Eden wallet is a really good one too that they've rolled out. Those are like the main two that I would say are really dominating the market right now. There are other ones like Leather Wallet, Unisat, OKX has a wallet too, but I would say my recommendation, if you want to get your hands dirty very quickly without having any issues, because Xverse supports rare sats, not all wallets do. So does Magic Eden. They support inscriptions. They support separating your wallet into Bitcoin like an actual payment address versus a Ordinals or Runes or a rare sat address. Xverse, I would say, is the way to go, or Magic Eden.
I think that answers my next question, which is how do you know when you have some Satoshis in your wallet and you're spending some money. You're not just spending one of these like incredibly valuable Satoshis.
You want that wallet that splits it for you.
Yeah, exactly. Which Xverse and Magic Eden do that. Yep, exactly.
So right now, I could basically go to some marketplace, buy a rare Satoshi, spend a little bit of money inscribing it, and then saying, hey, I have this inscribed Satoshi that I made. Does anyone want to buy it? I could put it on some marketplace and see if there's a market for it.
Yeah. Yes. Or you could just buy the rare set in or exotic set, not inscribe it, and just hold it.
And let other people inscribe it.
Or you can just hold it.
Exactly, because they're deflationary, right? Yeah. So the more people that inscribe them, the more sequestered, or rather, the more inscribed they are, the less there are in circulation. One of the plays I've made is I have a bag of uninscribed uncommon sats. I have a bag of uninscribed Block 9 450Xs, which maybe I'll do something with them in the future. But for right now, I'm just holding them as virgin sats, so to speak.
So like a bucket of, let's say a year ago, you bought a bucket of rare sats or exotic sats or whatever. How much has it gone up percentage-wise in the past year? Like just rare sats?
It depends. For sure. It depends on when you bought them, obviously, because it's insanely volatile. I would say, you know, if you bought them at around 75 to 130 bucks right now, you're, you know, even give or take the day. But there is a time period where Commoners, which was the first ever collection inscribed on uncommon sats, took 10,000 uncommons out of circulation, and the price ran up from $130 to $800 in about an hour. You know, so like there are different catalysts that I would say change the volatility of that right now. It's also, like I was saying in the beginning of the podcast, that it was significantly harder to acquire them, which when they were more expensive versus now, where we have peer-to-peer marketplaces like Magisat and Magic Eden, where you can, you know, very easily buy and sell these, and the free market has dictated the price. So if you bought at the top, you're definitely down right now. But this is very much like a long-term play.
But also, again, the average person even involved in crypto doesn't know anything about this, even though it might be common in your community. I can tell you, like, I'm involved in crypto every day, and I don't really know that much about the whole ordinal world. And so if this becomes a thing, which it is already, I mean, there's 70 million of these inscribed, but if this becomes a thing where people know it the way they know NFTs, then these rare sats that are worthy of inscription will go up in value.
I mean, that's my bet.
Yeah, nothing is obviously guaranteed.
Right.
And
what projects are you working on now with these inscriptions? Like, what's the type of project you're working on?
Yeah, so the most recent one, we actually have it launching on April 15th on the Magic Eden launchpad. It is called Runevo, which is a pre-runes ordinals collection. So what you'll be able to do is pizza artifacts are getting an allocation to this, and people are able to mint them. And they're able to collect this as an ordinal before the halving. And then holding that, we're rolling out two massive mobile-first infrastructure platforms that can't talk about just yet, only because we're launching them at the halving, which is give or take April 18th or the 20th. We'll see. But what I can say is that Pizza Artifacts and Runevo, owning those, will have a lot of utility within using those platforms. You'll be able
Why
to generate
is the
a lot of points
for
doing
for
transactions.
This? Is it related to the halving?
Yeah, it's very important. Yeah, it is. So Runes, the protocol that enables this whole casino of meme tokens and utility tokens on Bitcoin, is going live at block 840,000, which is the halving block. And Casey Rodemar inscribed or pre-mined the first ever runes, which is going to be called uncommon.goods. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, who ends up getting the first halving block, because that'll dictate, you know, like the first 1,000 names and what they are, aside from, you know, uncommon goods. But everything happens at the halving. The Epic Sat gets mined at the halving. Runes goes live at the halving. So that's kind of like why the date is the date.
And is it just some lucky miner who's going to end up with the Epic Sat at the halving?
It is a lucky miner for sure, and there is definitely a lot of people that are competing to become said lucky miner right now, and there are a lot of people bribing miners right now to be included in that block and actually get the first 1,000 runes. And I can tell you, I'm talking like bribes of 20 Bitcoin, you know, like real bribes.
Wow.
But even with that bribe, there's still only like a 15% chance that you get it, which isn't bad. There's a chance. Obviously, the odds aren't in your favor, but they're not bad, you know, 15%. But that's very much what's happening right now.
Well, it seems like there's an expected value there, though, much higher than 15 Bitcoin if you're talking about millions of dollars for an epic sat.
Yeah. Also, I am 5 minutes over. I have a 5 o'clock that I'm late to. So I don't know how we're supposed to do this abruptly if you want to do like an end.
No. I'm going to keep talking to Tim here. So, Ben, thank you so much.
Help
yourself out. Good luck on your projects. I'm going to maybe buy some. I don't know. And
thanks so much, man.
Thanks for answering my questions. I know I asked a ton of dumb questions, so I appreciate you answering.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.